It's the time of year when we revisit the great stories of our tradition, look for ways to enliven the symbols that they carry, listen to the music that again carries the stories for us, and hear the words that have stirred our hearts and minds. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. It's interesting, isn't it, how that particular story has captured the hearts and minds of our culture. A young man of uncertain parentage faces off an empire that wants to conquer and exploit other nations and races. It resonates with another story, I know. I'm not going to do an exegesis on Star Wars or even on the biblical readings that we've heard tonight. I want to pick up just a few words out of the last reading. I love the beginning of John's Gospel, and as much as I love how Nathan brings the Bible readings into Australian English, I have to return to a more traditional reading of this verse for tonight. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. The Word became flesh and lived among us. I love the poetry, the mystical quality, like great music. Just a few notes, just a few words, and the whole story is evoked. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. 2.5 years ago, I did a 30-day silent Ignatian retreat. So 10 minutes of silence here is no problem. It was a wonderful experience for me. The main method is to reflect upon set Bible readings, putting yourself into the scene, not as just an observer, but interacting with the characters and sometimes becoming one of the characters. And the readings particularly focus on the life of Jesus, his experience as a man, and the experience of the people around him. So when Nathan asked me to preach tonight, I knew I wanted to share with you some of my experience of that retreat, particularly the nativity stories. On the retreat, I had to go back to the story several times on the direction of my spiritual director. Here's your reading for today. Again. But each time I found myself more engaged. These meditations are my take on the story. They are fiction, declaration, a fantasy of my own making. In 1983, John Alexander, writing in The Other Side, he wrote on fantasy, and he said, "Being free of the need to copy reality, fantasy is free to explore a deeper reality, paradoxically, with more accuracy and more care." So I will read you some of my fantasies on the Nativity. I'm going to paint a word picture, one layer at a time, a bit like building an icon, I suppose. I know the end result for me is far closer to the deeper reality of Jesus' birth than any mire window, nativity scene, or children's Christmas play. A disclaimer, there are no heavenly choirs, no angels, lots of people, ordinary people, doing ordinary things. The Word became flesh and lived among us. As I said, I revisit the story from different angles, so we begin with take one. I journey with Mary and Joseph from Nazareth to Bethlehem. Great masses of people on the move, in all directions, hot and dusty, walking together. Joseph is wondering about the life Mary is carrying, as she does too. Love growing between them in their commitment to make this journey of parenthood and family life together. Mary tired and footsore. Joseph buys a donkey for her to ride in the last days as her time is near. No space in the village. Everywhere is full. They go through to the shepherd's caves on the hill opposite, empty in summer because the shepherds are out in the fields with their sheep. Here is shelter, quiet, private, and they can rest. Mary's labour begins. Joseph cannot help her. She labours alone in the dark. She knows what will happen. She was with Elizabeth at John's birth. But the lonely labouring in the night is hard, and her cries to God are heard by Joseph, and he too prays for her safety and the new life emerging. As the dawn approaches, her last final cry becomes a sob of joy as the baby arrives. She cuts the cord and wraps him and brings him to her breast, where he feeds on her body. Her afterbirth comes away and she marvels at the life that has come from her body with blood and water. Joseph comes and gives her and the child his blessing and accepts him as his own. The shepherds have heard the noises, the pain and the cries of joy, and as the dawn breaks, the great chorus of birdsong that greets this event. They come to see what's been happening, delighting and joking about the new life and joy of the parents, a new David born in David's town, thanks to the orders of the emperor, in a sheep cave palace. With the dawn chorus, I sing too. Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first song. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning. Praise for them springing fresh from the word. And the word became flesh and lived among us. In December 2009, I was in Bethlehem at the beginning of December, before the Christmas crowds arrived, visiting the Church of the Nativity, revered by many as the birthplace of Jesus, was good, but I felt much more connected to the story of Jesus when I was in the countryside outside the towns, looking at the landscape that actually shaped Jesus' life. And this was particularly the case when we went to the shepherd's caves on the hill opposite the town of Bethlehem. They have been so obviously used to shelter animals for thousands of years, even though the tourists are using them now to visit, there is still the strong smell and greasiness of the walls from the sheep. It's in the ordinary details and bits of the biblical stories that enlivened this for me, noting the ordinary details in the stories. At the time of Jesus' birth, it must have been summer, not winter as celebrated in the Northern Hemisphere. No sensible shepherd would be outdoors in winter at night. It was summer when you took your flocks out into the fields. In winter, the caves would have been full of animals and people, all huddled together, trying to keep warm. In summer, the shepherd's cave, the stable for their animals, was empty. And the word became flesh and lived among us. Take two. For my prayer today, I walk across to the lower ridge of stones near my cabin, holding the stories of the Nativity in my heart. I'm drawn to the ordinary details. They walked on stones and grasses too. I come upon a little path, animal or human, that wanders up beside the rocks. I feel myself with Joseph and Mary walking to Bethlehem, each wondering what the future will hold as Mary's pregnancy draws toward the end. Going through the stories again, it's the ordinariness that strikes me. No angels here and supernatural occurrences, but God speaking in the everyday and ordinary events and reactions of humans. A young girl finds herself pregnant and wonders how it happened. What is she going to do? She's not yet married and there's scandal ahead. She prays, and in the movements of her heart and soul, she is consoled by God. She says yes to the life that she carries. Carrying this life, enfleshing God's will in this way, will cost her dearly. Her body broken open, her heart broken open, the possibilities of her world broken open, new life coming through her. Joseph, as Mary labours in the shepherd's cave, wanders down the hill to where the shepherds sit round their fire. They were terrified when they heard the unearthly noises coming from their caves. A devil must have taken up residence. But when Joseph emerges from the shadows, a bit of a start there, and tells them that his wife is in labour, the shepherds get very blokey and are joking around. The relief after the terror. One of them sends a boy to fetch his mother to help the poor woman. No man would dare go near. And they pass the wineskin around and tell jokes. The local woman does not arrive in time for the birth, but is there soon afterwards to help with the cleaning up and to make sure that the new mother and her baby are as comfortable as they can be in this smelly hole. She runs down the hill to tell Joseph the good news that he has a son. The shepherds all cheer and throw more wood on the fire, lighting up the whole area. They're in full party mode now and keep telling their great joke of the new king born in David's city. The party continues until dawn. Joseph goes to Mary, his heart full of love, and blesses her and the new child. It's a mystery to him, but whatever is happening, he knows in his heart that he wants to be in it with Mary and this baby, a precious and holy gift from God entrusted to them. I'm moved by the ordinary ways in which God moves here in human hearts and emotions, human action and response. It's good to pay attention to the ordinary. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. Ordinary people doing ordinary things and holding in their story an extraordinary reality, a deeper reality. They have each said yes. Yes to their situation, to their experience. Our God is with us in ordinary experience and emotions. Take three. I've been instructed to bring myself into the scene as one of the characters. There is only one, really, for me, Mary. At first, I feel hesitant to put myself into her skin, but I ask her, and it's okay. The Annunciation. Down on my knees, cleaning. Sun on my back through the open door. Dust mites dancing around me as I sweep. A shadow comes over me, and I turn to see a stranger in the door. I cannot see his face. The sun behind him blinds me. His greeting is strange, and his words make no sense. I cannot have a child, as much as I would like to bear the Messiah, like every other woman, not without a husband. He says that God will do it. I'm afraid, uncertain. What will that mean? But he tells me that cousin Elizabeth is pregnant. All things are possible for God. I feel the power of God in this stranger, and I turn on my knees towards him and place my head on the floor in homage. May God's will be done on earth as in heaven. Riding with Joseph into Bethlehem, birthing pangs. Retreating to the back of the cave where the shepherds have their bed shelves off the floor. Wash myself in preparation with water from the cistern inside. Sweet smell of the sheep dung and old wool. Pacing the floor with the contractions, labouring alone. the birth, squatting to catch the child as I push him from me. His first gasp of air and cry of surprise as the air floods into his body, his arms and legs suddenly free of constraint, wave in the air. Cutting the cord, the flow of the afterbirth, bathing him with water. His hand grasps my finger and I marvel at his perfect fingers. Wrap him in the bands I've bought. He smells so sweet. His hair so soft on my cheek. Lift him to the breast. He makes little noises of desire and searching that pull my heartstrings like nothing ever before. I watch in amazement as he turns at the touch of the nipple and takes it into his mouth. Such a miracle. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. I wonder why God had to do that. Why did God come into human experience as a human being? The retreat brought me to focus on ordinary human experience, ordinary human emotions. Why did God enter our world as one of us? It seems to me, the conclusion I came to, that it's in our ability to feel emotions, our affective capacity. We feel things, we are moved, we respond to the movements of our hearts. The people in these stories, both in my fantasies and in the biblical narratives, were following their hearts. They were sensitive to the ways in which God moved in the world, in their lives, and they responded. They said yes, yes to the unknown, knowing there were risks, and lived into the experience. Jesus was a man who lived his life as fully as he could, following his heart, finding God's heart in him. Actually, the sense is for me of God finding his human heart, learning the human experience from the inside. As he grew, Jesus knew the full range of human emotions, and I think this is what God needed somehow. This is my own little bit of theology that probably gets shot down by somebody one day. God needed to enter into our experience to know what it was like from the inside, entering fully into our experience with all its limitations and griefs and anguish and joy. God becomes human and brings into himself, reconciles to himself in Jesus, the full range of human emotional experience. I had a great sense of surprise at this discovery, discovering God with me, really with me in the midst of human emotion. One day on the retreat, I had an image of myself as a soldier in battle fatigues, down on the ground, doing that belly crawl across the grass through the battlefield of human emotions. I looked over to my side and saw God there with me, hunkered down too, in the midst of the reality of human emotions. Emmanuel, with us is God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. I came back from that retreat, and 6 weeks later my husband Patrick was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia. He died in August this year. It's been a rough ride, full of emotion. My next words are, I am glad. Hard to say that sometimes. I say thanks to God for the whole lot. I've learnt that I cannot choose which emotions I will feel. They come unbidden at any time. Joy and grief, laughter and tears. I've prayed throughout it all to be open to life in all its fullness. That means the mess as well as the joy. I've learnt that it means being open to all of life. The shit, the anguish, the laughter, the ridiculous, the despair, the boredom, the grief. Life is full. Life is always full. Jesus lived into the fullness of his life, and we know that it was no easy ride. And we're called to do likewise, to live into the fullness of our own experience, whatever that might be, to face life, our life, with open arms and hearts, like Jesus, like Mary and Joseph, to say yes to the mystery and to live it fully. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, and the Word became flesh and lived among us. May the Word be with you.